Okay, let's gather back here and have a seat. Someone asked me during the break, we were talking about these pictures on the wall, and he commented on one of those photographs and how it reminded him of someone that he reminded me of him of one of his relatives. And so I want to, before we get into the second part, I want to tell you a little story about that lady on the inn. Her name is Fanny Murray. Fanny Murray was 13 years old at the end of the Civil War. And when the Associated Press picked up the story of our cemetery, I got a call from an elderly white gentleman who lived in Ohio. And he said, do you know that Fanny Murray saved my life? And I said, well, how so? He said, well, when I was about to go into high school in 1938, my father remarried. And I don't know the circumstances that surrounded that marriage. I do know, however, that she turned out to be an evil stepmother. So much so that she refused to do his laundry. And that was back in the day when everything had to be washed and ironed. So he decided that he was going to drop out of school, because he didn't want to be made fun of by his mates at school and have them call him Raggedy Boy and such things as these. So he decided to drop out of school. Well, when Fanny Murray found out about it, the old Fanny Murray, when she found out about it, she said, if you stay in school, I'll do your laundry. But I'll have to charge you 10 cents a month, just so he could think he had a hand in things. Well, to make a long story short, he just retired from being English professor at University of Ohio. His son teaches at Ohio State, and all of his grandchildren go to university. He says it's a direct result of the loving kindness that Fanny Murray showed toward him. So, the seemingly insignificant things that we do for other people can be long-lasting and far-reaching. Fanny Murray is long since gone, buried out in the cemetery. But that act of loving kindness goes on and on. So when we see these pictures, and we see certain images throughout our life, from the iconographic images that we see on the walls in our church, to the photographs of our loved ones and people that remind us of our loved ones, we know that the only thing that is of any importance is that mark that we make in this world. The mark that we make in this world toward other people. That act of loving kindness that we show toward other people. That's the only thing that's important. I was talking with Father on the way down from the airport yesterday, and he said, tell me a little bit about your background, Father Moses. And I said, well, I was sort of reluctant. I hate to do it. People always want to know. But I have to do it, because I think sometimes I'm sort of confused between remembering wrongs and sharing my story. So we're going to have this little film, and then I will talk a little bit about my conversion story and a little bit about linking ancient African Christianity to the African American experience. So let's begin. Let's make sure it's up loud. now we press it right. Her mother's name was Marie Boone, and Marie Boone was
was a slave that belonged to Nathan. And they had Caroline. And they loved her. This is a very tricky situation when we're talking about matters of the heart. And I think that Nathan Boone got entangled in certain matters of the heart. We have a cemetery that's on the National Historic Site, Church Street. It's dedicated to slaves, Indians, and paupers. This is a slave tag from my great-grandmother. It's from 1858, from the A.G. Brock Slave Trading Company in Alexandria, Virginia. It says, strong, healthy slaves. Lot number 5, that's the lot that Daisy was sold in.
This is the kingdom of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Now and ever and of the ages, all ages. And please let us pray to the Lord.
When I was a boy, I used to love to come to my grandmother's house. Everything was so peaceful. And I remember once being on the back porch of my grandmother's house, and I asked my grandmother why there were so many different races. And she said, well, son, because we're all flowers in God's garden. Some of us are roses and some of us are daisies, but we're all flowers in God's garden. And that was enough for a child, but it wasn't nearly enough for a man. I spent all my life trying to find out where those flowers were in God's garden that looked like me. I couldn't find them. The police had come to our house because they didn't get a search warrant. So they set our house on fire and came in with the fire department. And they seized all our drugs. I was thrown into a cell that was 4.5 foot by 6.5 foot, with a 12-foot ceiling and no windows. And I was looking underneath my cell door, and I could see some of what was going on out there in the hall, and I was terrified. And God heard my prayer, and it seems as though something from the eternal touched my life. And so I wanted to sit out and do what it was that I could to fulfill the promise that I made to God and that I knew He was now holding me to. And then I looked at the priest, and beside him on the icon screen, beside the picture of Jesus, there was an icon of St. Moses the Ethiopian. St. Moses was black, just like me. He had nostrils just like mine. He had lips like mine, and nose like mine. Something from the eternal spoke to me and said, now you see the flowers in God's garden that look like you.
She answered and said that we're all flowers in God's garden. And spent all those years trying to find out where the flowers were in God's garden to look like me, and I couldn't find them. So I said, there's no God. And also, I like money, built up in games, better than anything. So I took to carry guns and doing things that are so scandalous that we won't speak of. But I couldn't find those flowers in God's garden. I knew that they must be out there somewhere. And the flower that I was looking for was the flowers that were the pillars of the church, so to speak. My roots in Christianity. That was something that would link me to Christianity. You know, I grew up in the late 50s and the early 60s. That's when I came of age. And, you know, and people in my community, in the African-American community, the young people were saying, you know, because Malcolm X was whispering into our ears, you know, and I liked the way he whispered into my ears also, because he also taught me as well as, you know, that I was a man in America. And I could stand up. But he also said some other things that weren't quite right. Particularly, he said that Christianity is a white man's religion. And he couldn't have been further from the truth. Because, as my dear friend, who is is a Russian abbot, said that, you know, concerning those Islamic people, and even my people who are Russian, you know that your people were Christians when we were living in caves and eating dogs. So actually, that statement that he made couldn't have been further from the truth. But you know, we were confused. I came from a confused generation who was seeking something, seeking the truth. It was in the time that Roots came out, you know. We were looking for our roots, and I wanted to see my roots in Christianity and where they led me. And I couldn't find them. And in the end, you know, I was a Sufi Muslim. I was, you know, studied at the Zen Center in San Francisco. And I was tried everything, occultism, and everything I could think of to try and find out where this God was that looked like me, and I couldn't find him. So I settled on being a non-denominational pastor for a while. And my wife and I lived in Atlanta, Georgia at this time. And we had a friend who lived in Richmond, Virginia. And all of my friends were becoming Orthodox. But I said, I will never become an Orthodox person. Never. Because I come from the church which I believe was the only salvific church. The black church of that time, the only salvific church in America. Because it led people from bondage to freedom. And it was our rod that brought us through many hard times. My family, as Father was saying, that we talked yesterday about my family. I come from a long line of gospel singers. My mother and her nieces and cousins were very famous gospel singers. Actually, they're in the archives in Branson, Missouri, for famous gospel singers from Missouri. And I watched this pattern that happened in our church. I watched this pattern of going from this gospel music, this spiritual music. Which said that, which brought us such songs as "Swing Down, Sweet Chariot," and songs like "Look Away Beyond the Blue," and songs that spoke of this world to come. And then after slavery, we developed a new music called gospel music. When we spoke about the salvific work of Jesus. Instead of saying, go down, Moses, tell old Pharaoh to let my people go, we were saying that Jesus is my rock, my sword, and my shield. And now and then we had fallen into this present state, which I couldn't find God. which was just like the new black church. The new black church was, for me, the same as the new white church. Only they had better singing. Much better singing. And in some cases not. In Missouri, in the Ozarks, we did. But it was basically the same thing, and I just couldn't find out where God was. Where was this God that was the God that I was looking for? And where were those people? Where were those people? Did it all end when with the apostles? And you know, I would see pictures, paintings of St. Anthony and different ones, and they're all white. That's where they were painted. They're from Egypt, which is in Africa, but they're all white. And I thought, well, geez, I wonder where this God is. My friend John asked us to come to visit him in Richmond, Virginia. And John he's a great guy. I mean, he's probably responsible for being part of the church. And John said, come and visit us. And I said, okay, we'd known each other since we were flower children. A lot of my friends, we all kind of came out of, one point of our life, we were in San Francisco, we were like the hippies, or something like that. So we went to visit John, and we went there, and as soon as we got there, we'd driven all the way from Atlanta to Richmond, and John says, come and go to this church with me. And, John was kind of sort of an ecumenically minded guy, And we said, oh, John. Of course, my wife is much kinder than I am. She said, let's go. And we went to this church. And I was making fun of the church even before I came inside of it. We were outside the church, and it was a house church. They had converted the upstairs portion of the house into the chapel, and they had this little stairs that went out the back, and I was walking up the stairs, and I said to my wife, this isn't even really a church, just out loud, right in front of those people, and because I didn't have any respect, and so my wife, she asked me to be quiet. I think I was just trying to get a rise out of her, really, we went inside the church. And there was a three-person choir, three women. And I looked at my wife right inside the narthex of the church. I said, this is not a choir. And of course,